Urban Mind. How can urban spaces support the well-being of teenage girls? Hi, my name is Marcin Wojciech Żebrowski, and welcome to the newest episode of Urbcast, my podcast about architecture, urbanism, cities, and many more. The research project Urban Mind at Henning Larsen aims to explore how the design of urban spaces can contribute to the mental health and well-being of teenage girls. The project recognizes the deteriorating mental health of girls and young women living in cities and seeks to address this neglected area of urban planning. The research is guided by three key questions: how to make urban spaces more attractive for girls, how to design urban spaces that support teenage girls' mental health, and how to avoid falling into stereotypes. And today with me is Jalda Pilician, who is the senior urban designer at Henning Larsen, and he's responsible for the project. So I'm very happy to have you here. Hi, Jalda.
Hi, thank you for having me.
The first time I heard about the project, I thought that this is a very interesting take on the urban mental health. We will be discussing all things urban here, since this is a podcast mostly about urbanism, cities, and architecture. But maybe before we dive deeply into the project, could you just introduce yourself and also your interest in social sustainability? Because I think this is a very important part of this conversation.
Yes, of course. My name is Jalda, and I am educated as an architect and urbanist. What is an urbanist? So that's like a combination of a lot of different things. So I've studied something that's called urban studies. It's like social scientists, political scientists, sciences, architecture, and urban planning. So that's the background. I come from like a design background supported with a lot of like theoretical background. And what I think is interesting when working with architecture and city planning is thinking about the people that are living in cities and how, you know, we are all different. We have different ways of being and acting in the city. There are different like power dynamics. There are different like ways of accessing the city. So I think that's like those are the dynamics that are interesting to understand when we are designing the city, so we can actually design something that is more inclusive and accessible for everyone. So in my work, I try to like focus really on the users and understand who they are and how they are and how we can basically like make things better.
And you also spent some years with Archilab, which is here in Copenhagen, a local architecture office working a lot with citizen involvement. So I guess this is something that really influenced you as well.
It does. And I would say, so Archilab, which was started with, it was Erasmus and Gina de Fresco who started it. And I would say they were like really pioneers of working with citizen participation. They did it when no one else like talked about it or did it. So that's really, that's something that has really shaped me and my professional life. This focus on like when you work on projects, you really like that the users should be your departure point.
Was that kind of the first or maybe the beginning of the movement of social sustainability here in Denmark or Copenhagen?
I wouldn't say it was the start. And I mean, it's maybe difficult to like, do you mean for me or for
you, I
or for
say.
Me? I mean, not really in a way, because I mean, I grew up in Tehran. And that's a city that is, I mean, there's like a huge gap between the rich and poor, between like men and women. There are basically like a lot of different gaps. So just like basically growing up in that city, I could see that not everyone had access to every spaces. And I could really see like the power dynamics that plays out in a city. So that's where it's like started. I started like thinking about it. I didn't know like how to handle it or how to work with it. Then I started working as an architect. At some point, I had to design, you know, a master plan for a city I had never been to or I didn't know anything about. And that just like what, you know, that's what really stopped me. I was like, I stopped for a moment and I was like, this is wrong, because I'm like purely looking at forms and not really knowing who am I designing for, what am I designing for. So I resigned and I applied for this urban studies program. And doing that program, we learned a lot about social sustainability. We also came from different backgrounds. So like a lot of different perspectives. We had like people from like political science, people who had like studied psychology, that brought like all these different perspectives about people. And I think that's where it started for me. And of course, Archilab was like a great place where we could actually you know, practice some of these things that I had learned during my studies, and also some of the to address some of the things that I had experienced, like growing up in a city that was so divided.
Why do you think it is, if it is, I guess it is, important to design with the people, with the users in mind?
Why is it important? Because, I mean, the cities are shaping us. Isn't it like a Jane Jacobs quote almost? Like, I mean, the cities are shaping us. So, like, the way you move in the city, like, the things you have access to, you know, the places you go, your everyday life is basically, in a lot of ways, defined by this, what the city can offer you and what you can access. So that's really important to sort of make everything more accessible and more equitable. Because otherwise, it just means that there's only, like, a few who can use the city.
And the aspect of mental health also comes to this equation here. How did you get interested in this aspect? Because this is like mental health overall.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest challenges we have in cities, in urban areas. This is also a big one to tackle.
Yeah.
And this is also a part of the research project we will discuss. But how did you approach, how did you get interested in those mental problems as well?
So mental health is something that everyone is talking about, even like in our workplace, we all talk about like being stressed. We are much more aware about our mental health than we have been earlier. But it's also a very like difficult or complex problem to tackle, because mental health, it is like affected by a lot of different factors. It is affected by your childhood. It is affected by your job, the place you're living, your family. So it is really difficult to pinpoint what is it that makes us like have not so good mental health. What we know, talking to a lot of different experts, is that the city is one of the factors that affects our mental health. And it does that in a lot of different ways. When you walk in the city, if it's like, if there are too many cars, if it's too loud, you might get stressed. If you can't get access to like certain spaces in the city, you feel excluded. That is like not so good for your mental health. If you are in a city where you feel included, where you know you can be part of a lot of different activities, a part of a lot of different communities, that would help you not feeling alone. So there are a lot of ways that the city can actually have a positive impact on our mental health. We can't say how it is like one-to-one, because it is not a one-to-one relationship, but we know that there is a relationship. I basically became really interested in this because I was working on a project where we wanted to focus on mental health in a design of like an urban area. And then I started like looking at the literature that was there, which was basically not so much. And I was really trying to like find principles about how to work with mental health. I just figured out that there wasn't so much, even though it's something that we talk about all the time. And then I thought, it could be interesting to maybe dig deeper and understand what is it really that we are talking about when we are talking about mental health in cities. At the same time, like this report came out, which is called the Danes Health. It's basically like an annual report that comes out every year showing the like health status of Danes. And we could see that young women and girls, they really had a lot of issues with their mental health, much more than boys and young men. And we thought this could be like really interesting to look into how could we actually like design cities to have a positive impact, or at least, you know, contribute. We know that we can solve the issues of mental health through design of cities, but we can contribute. So that was the starting point of this this project.
This main inspiration, was that this report, or was it just kind of the whole of your previous experience?
It is, of course, you know, a combination. So I had something in my backpack, and this idea of like making cities more equitable and accessible. And there has been like so much discussions during the last maybe, I would say, 5-10 years in Denmark, and much more before that in other cities around the world about, you know, women and girls in the city. And sometimes they get like too simplistic in a way. You know, there are a lot of people who say, you know, there are too many skate parks and, you know, girls don't use skate parks, or, you know, things like that, that always like provoked me a little bit, because I felt like they were too simplistic. So I always wanted to do a project to like understand this user group more and really understand, is it because like girls don't like skate parks, or are there other factors in play? Because, for example, we know that like physical activity and sport is good for our mental health. So if we know that, you know, we are designing too many skate parks, but girls are not using it, then, you know, we are doing something wrong. But it was also at the same time provoking to me, like these statements. That's what I wanted to like look more into and understand why things are as they are. Why are they not using skate parks? Like, what is it? Where does it come from? And how can we do it differently? So I had it always like in the back of my mind every time I read an article that said, you know, girls are like this or women are like this, like generalized, basically like a big user group. And then this idea of mental health, because again, as said, you know, the cities affect our mental health. So how could we like connect these two? I would say that that report, it just like ignited that interest that already, you know, existed, or that curiosity that already existed.
You said that it's about generalizing some groups. It's also about genderizing, as we discussed yeah. before the conversation, some of the public spaces.
Yeah.
So, for example, I would also, from my experience as a teenager, I don't know why, but I would assume, of course, like there is this division that most of boys are using skate parks or maybe football pitches, and girls yeah. play somewhere else. But where? And that's also the part of this discussion. So I'm very curious, how did the research as a whole, and you as a research team, how did you involve teenage girls in the project? How did you give them the space?
So we did it in a lot of different ways. It has been a long project. We started last September, so it's been going on for quite a few months now. And what we did was that we involved the teenage girls very, very early in the process, already, you know, in the phase when we were trying to understand like how urban spaces are working for them. So what we did was that we did walks and talks with them. And so two of our really good colleagues, Trina and Maya, who are anthropologists, and, you know, they have some different methods than architects do. So basically what they did was that they went for walks, long walks in the city with the user group. They were guided by them throughout the city and just had casual conversations about how they move around, you know, what spaces they use and how are they using it, what spaces they are not using and why are they not using them. And they also made a video diary. So basically filming their day, you know, like they are very used to using their telephones or their phones. So we thought it was a good opportunity. So they're basically like showing us like glimpses of their everyday life. Where are they, you know, how are they moving around? Or is it public transport? Is it walking? Is it biking? Like what sort of activities they do? So that was our involvement in the very early phase, where we tried, you know, to unfold like this problematic of like, how could we actually make urban spaces more attractive for them? And if they are not, why? What's the reason behind that? And then we, you know, took all that data and worked on it, tried to like find patterns, but also understand the reasons why. And then after that, we did some design workshops together with them and tried to like come up with some concepts about how we could work with different urban spaces. And I think like what was really interesting was actually like these video diaries. I mean, it's not because we got like tons of them, but just the ones that we got, I think what it showed us was that, again, like this idea of, you know, a girl is like this and that, that just doesn't apply. So we had this girl, you know, who would go to a shopping mall, who would like watch a Barbie marathon with her friends. And like you would say, okay, that's maybe a little bit stereotypical, but then at night they would go out and do longboarding in the city. All those girls, they are really a mix of different things, and it's about, you know, giving them the opportunity to unfold those interests instead of, you know, putting them into boxes and say, okay, like you should sit here and look at the boys who are playing who are playing football or skating. I mean, the interest is there. There are just some barriers that stops them maybe from unfolding those.
We are talking here about the girls aged from 14 to 16,
yeah.
In Copenhagen.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
And during those discussions, walks, was there a thing that was the most surprising to you? What was that, if there was one?
I don't know if it was, but yes, like some of these things, just like understanding that they are a combination of all these like different interests. I think that was really interesting. You know, their eagerness to participate. And it wasn't me who did the walk and talks. It was Maya and Trine. But I also, like, after we invited them to the office to do these workshops, I had actually a lot of good conversations. I love talking to them. Like, they are so reflected. And I think that was, again, like an eye-opener for me. Like, it's been a long time ago. I was a teenage girl and I don't have, like, teenage children. So I'm not really in contact with that user group. I haven't been. So just, like, sitting together with them and asking them about how they use the city and why. I was amazed how many like good conversations we had. And I thought it's a huge resource we are not using. Like instead we are, you know, sitting and trying to like design based on the ideas we have that are not correct in the majority of times, instead of just like reaching out and asking people who all it's about, and they just make it so easier. So that's one of the things that I thought it was really interesting. In terms of like the findings, one of the other things that we worked a lot with was this idea of in-betweenness, like talking to these girls. And it's maybe something that we all know, like teenage years are difficult years because you're going from being a child to being an adult. So you have like this these years, like 2-3 years where you don't really know to like which realm you belong. And I think they were really good to like, they were great setting or putting more words on it and unfolding this, like how they felt. Like one of them was like, I don't feel like a child anymore. I don't feel like an adult, but, and that's why I don't feel like I can go to a playground, but I also don't feel like I can just stand somewhere and smoke because they don't really belong. And that also reflects in the way that they use the city because, you know, they would go like close to a playground. Maybe it's a bit interesting to play, but like, you know, they are teenagers, they're almost adults, so they shouldn't play. At the same time, they can't go to a bar. They can't use all these commercial activities in the city because they don't have money. So that's also one of the things they said, you know, a lot of the times they would go to all this, like, for example, Vanadimes, by like close to us. There are a lot of commercial activities, but, you know, it attracts them, but they don't have money to participate in it. So that idea of like in-betweenness, it became the backbone of this project.
How will you use this knowledge and those findings? Because there will be, as far as I know, two products of the whole process, of the whole research project. And one will be about the process, like a process manual. And the second one would be like this design manual. Could you say how you develop those?
Yes. So the reason why we are doing a design manual and a process manual is that, as you mentioned, we have done this project with teenage girls in Copenhagen. I mean, we try to go for like a more representative like user group. So we try to like pick the girls from like different parts of the city and from different, you know, contexts and backgrounds. But when that said, we only, you know, talked with 25 girls in Copenhagen. So that's a very specific context, which means that even though some of our findings could be used in other contexts, they can't be generalized. Like every time you want to design something in a city, you have to like understand your context, you have to understand your user groups and their struggles. And that's why we are doing this process manual, because we want to emphasize that, you know, you can't just take the design manual and use it like one-to-one. There has to be a process for you to work with your user group. So the way we have developed this process manual is based on our own experience, collecting like these lived experiences from girls, how they experience being in the city, how they experience being a teenager, and what sort of methods we used, what was difficult and what was easy. For example, like actually finding the girls to participate in the project, that has been quite difficult, not because they don't want to participate, but because we tried to like find them through institutions, through schools, and that just like showed to be a bit difficult. So like we are reflecting on some of those experiences, trying to, you know, just give it away to people who might want to be interested to do the same. And then talking about the methods and like do's and don'ts of doing participation. For example, one of the things we are talking about is that when you're doing participation, don't tell the girls you're participating or you're involving them because they're girls. Because that would already, you know, put them in that box where they have to take on a very certain like social and cultural role.
Yeah.
So like recommendations like that. And then the design guide is basically, you know, the concepts we came up with. So we are working with these three concepts, to flow, to be, and to play in the city. And we are trying to unfold it, like, what does it mean in a city? So it's more like, you know, concepts based on our involvement work. Mm. So that's why we are doing two, because the design one, of course, like, it could be used as inspiration, but it couldn't be like a standalone tool that you just like take and apply one-to-one.
If it comes to the mental health and the challenges related, while you've been discussing those, like the girls you've been talking to, were they like aware, were they conscious about the mental health challenges that they have? So I'm also wondering, how can we as designers, as well as city makers, municipalities, how can we implement this huge challenge of mental health into the design processes, and how can we understand it better?
They were very aware, I would say. Again, like it was girls between 14 to 16. They were very reflected on their like own situation. They really talked a lot about, you know, we grown-ups, we talk about children and teenagers using their phones all the time. I would say they are much more reflected than we are. So they already mentioned that this was an issue. And sometimes when they felt too stressed, one of them said like, I would just like put my phone and my computer away and I would go for a walk in a park. They also mentioned, like, we asked them what makes them happy. One of them said, like, having a fantasy is a big part of actually being happy. So they pinpointed all these things that makes them happy or makes them, you know, stressed. And those are the things that we can take and maybe use in our design. For example, you know, this idea of like not using your phone or like having an opportunity to do something else. How can we, and that's one of the things that we are trying to work in our concept design. How can we actually like design spaces that encourages you to put your phone away for a few minutes and engage in something else? Or this idea of like using your fantasy. I don't think we are designing our cities in a way that sort of ignites our fantasy. We just like repeat the same again and again. You know, as some of them said, just looking at graffitis that would help their imagination going. I think the way to work with mental health would be, of course, you know, they have all the scientific background, but also just, you know, to ask the user groups and see like what makes them happy, what is it that they need, and then integrate that, try to like translate that into design. So that's one of the things that we are working in this project. And like the way that we tackled it was that we took like this framework from one of our experts who sits in our expert group. She's an architecture psychologist, Kaya Rosler. And she named, you know, these six basic sort of needs for our mental well-being. And we try to like nuance that based on the girls' experience. So for example, one of the things she named was safety. When we talk to the girls, you know, when we talk about safety in general in architecture, it becomes about lighting. But when we talk to the girls, we really understand that safety is about a lot of different things. So one of them said, because the city is like an unknown territory, they have just, you know, they have just been allowed to experience the city on their own. So one of them said, if I go to a place that I don't know, I would feel unsafe if it's the first time I'm there. Like, or the second time I would feel better. So that's, you know, that's something that would fill them or make them feel safe or unsafe. So we really like try to get like those scientific frameworks and link it to the lived experience. So that's a way to work with mental health, I would say, instead of like going for those general categories of, you know, safety or green spaces, because what is it they actually mean for the user groups? That's like what we have to unfold as architects.
Moving forward, Urban Mind as a project will be an open source one.
Yeah.
And when this discussion is published, probably it's not available yet, but definitely we will add a link to that once it's there. How could and who could use this report, this open source data that is gathered by you and the team?
So we think it's targeted towards, of course, like, you know, architects, urban designers, landscape architects, but also the municipalities and developers, who are basically everyone who is working with creating cities and having a part in it. Because it is, I think it's really important for everyone to understand that this is like a big issue. We have this big user group that we are not setting so much focus on when we are working with our cities. So I think everyone who is working with city development could be sort of on the receiver of the reports. And of course, there are like different things which would be interesting for maybe different audience. I think maybe the municipalities would be more interested in, you know, the process of how they could actually do it, whereas the architects could be more interested in how you can actually like translate some of those ideas into design concepts.
The manuals, they will be available and everyone could be taking that and implementing into the projects. Do you have any ideas on how can Henning Larsen use it also as a company that stays behind this research? And I mean here, do you have in mind any pilot projects that could be spin-offs of those findings that you have?
So we think it is really important to do pilot projects because the work that we have done now is, in a way, it is theoretical. So we have to qualify it by actually like testing it out in reality. So that's what we are working with. We are working on doing a couple of pilot projects, like different places in like smaller towns and in bigger cities, to actually like implement some of these ideas. That is to say, like, what we are working towards is to do a participation process together with the users in those areas and then translate those ideas into spaces that we can build, and then we can monitor those spaces and see, is it actually working for that user group? And that would be a way for us to sort of qualify the design and process manual that we are making. So that is a work in progress. Of course, we have to, you know, find out how we can finance the project. Because what I hear out, you know, in the world is that there are a lot of people who are interested in this topic, and it is becoming a bigger agenda. but it is still like everything social sustainability related, it is still like difficult to finance. So that's the process we are working on.
So this is also not about mental health challenges for people living in urban areas and especially the teenage girls, but it's also like kind of spreading the agenda, spreading the word about the social sustainability as a discipline.
It is, and I don't think we actually like say social sustainability directly anywhere in the books we are publishing, yeah. Because you know social sustainability could be a term that is difficult to define. So we are basically trying to take one aspect at a time. But it is like social sustainability because we are trying to understand how user group that maybe doesn't have access to a lot of spaces or doesn't feel welcome, like how can we actually like provide that access and make them feel welcome. So it is social sustainability in essence. We are just like not calling it that.
And what was the inspiration for the name Urban Mind?
I mean, urban has to be in it, right? It's like it is an urban project. So that wasn't like questionable. But then the mind is just because I think it's calling it like urban mental health would be a little bit. And we have also been talking back and forth about like these ideas of what is mental health, what is well-being. Those are also like very difficult. There are a lot of definitions about them, whereas mind is sort of like, you know, a more abstract word. So that's, it just like came out of, you know, one of those funny brainstorm sessions.
I was just curious about it. The standard part of this podcast is a book recommendation. And I would like to ask you for one. I know that one of them, of course, could be the report, the manual that will be released soon. But would you have any other recommendation around the topic for the listeners?
I mean, I knew you were going to ask this and I've been thinking about it. And I think it's difficult to recommend a book that is like solely about this topic. And that has also been our issue during this project because you know, there has been written books about mental health, there has been written books about feminism, and there has been written books about teenagers, but there is no book that brings, you know, all these topics together. And there are coming more and more books about, like, you know, women and girls in the city. But there is, like, no book that links all these topics together that I have been searching. I haven't been, like, able to find that book. So if someone knows what that book is, I would be very happy to read it. So not really like a book recommendation related to that topic. I was thinking like for me, just doing this project, it has been good to generally, you know, read more books about like feminism and gender studies and understanding, again, like unfolding this topic of like how do you like avoid this like stereotypical thinking because you're trying to sort of represent a user group and that could be very dangerous because doing that you want to sort of generalize and say they're like this and that. And that's why it has been really helpful for me to like read more books on this topic. Like one of the books that I think it was really interesting, even though it's not at all like directly related to this topic, is a book called The Right to Sex. It's written by Amir Srinivasan, if I'm pronouncing it right. And it's basically about, so the departure point for this book is that already, you know, at birth, you draw this distinction, which is a form of like assignment of you are either a boy or a girl. In very, very, very few cases that assignment doesn't exist because, you know, your sex organs are, you might have both, but those are very few sexes. And already like that assignment that puts you in a certain position, like in a power hierarchy. So something that is supposed to be biological, it's very cultural, already at a very, very early age. And then she just like discusses like the subject of sex, like through this lens and looking at different perspectives on it. And I think it's been like really interesting to read because it is like critical thinking about sex and gender and how, you know, it affects like all this like politics around it, how it affects our personal choices. Mm-hmm. And again, like if we want to like expand that to the city, I think it would be really interesting. Why is it that these girls, they say like, we wish we played more football or more skate, but they don't do it. Like, what are the mechanisms in play? So that's a book I can recommend, which is only like, you know, very... It's not related, but it gives, you know, a new perspective on like thinking about.
Okay, but it's like a well thought recommendation. It's not that you haven't had one. And this is of course something I will share as well. And then we will add any more links to Urban Mind once it's finally published. I wanted to say thank you a lot, Jada, to you, to Trine, to Maya, to Cecilia. I hope I'm not forgetting. Leah and Dorte.
Yeah.
Here from the team at Henning Larsen for developing that. Also thanks to the National Institute of Public Health in Denmark, the University of Southern Denmark, and the supporters of the Rumble Foundation. I think that you all together putting very, very inspiring projects. So thank you for sharing it, Yalda.
Of course. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the newest conversation with Yalda. And I hope that now you get to know a bit more about the Urban Mind Project and about the mental health challenges, issues, especially for the teenage girls in the urban spaces. If you would like to get to know something more, please visit the website of the project or contact Yalda or one of the other project leaders. You will find more information in the episode's description. Thank you and talk to you soon.